Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Shatkin Show on Blog Talk Radio on every evening, either 6:30, 8 o'clock, 9:30, 10 or 11. And you will get the facts and nothing but the facts and the truth and nothing but the truth. That's all you're going to get here. You're not getting political hype. You're not getting media lies. You're not getting the big lie. You're not getting media falsehoods. You're getting the Holy Scriptures, and you're getting the great books of the past. It is those that I choose to read and understand. Now, tonight I'm going to talk about, I'll tell you, I often talk at this show about theological issues and religious issues. I talk about political issues. I talk about literature, which I very much love, the great literature, such as War and Peace and Tolstoy's Resurrection and Milton's Paradise Lost and E.M. Foster's A Passage to India. I'm just naming some of them. And T.S. Eliot, The Idea of a Christian Society, and of course the Bible, which is the foundation of Western thought, as Mortimer Adler said in his great book, How to Read a Book. So, tonight I'm going to talk about the Psalms. And the title of this lecture, or talk, will be A Little Word on the Psalms. And let me say, ladies and gentlemen, that I am a great, great lover of biblical literature and thought. I never stopped reading it since I was a kid in Sunday school, and it has formed and shaped my mind and thinking for many, many years. And the Psalms are one of my favorite books of the Bible. I read them in Hebrew in seminary. I read them in English when I was in Sunday school, a kid, and I love them and treasure them as spiritual treasures and as literary treasures. I'm going to go into this in a little bit, but the title of this talk tonight will be A Little Word on the Psalms. Before I do that, let me give you a little background about myself and my background so you understand who I am. If you don't know me and you're listening to this show for the first time, of course I welcome you and love you all in the love of Jesus, who died for all men and all humanity, whether Muslim or gay or Jewish, whoever they are, he loves them and died for them. Of course, that is the true Christian religion and always will be. Now, I have to say, I'll give you a little background about myself, how I handle this show and my thinking in this show. This is a politically incorrect show. We don't go in for political correctness. We go in for honest intellectual honesty, honest discernment, honest thought. And we reject the big lie, we reject political rhetoric, we reject media lies, media falsehoods, and that type of thing. Not interested, it's a waste of time. Those organs of thought are not the organs of thought of all, but they are drugs and destructive of any intellectual functioning. For people who want to do any thinking, if you don't want to do any thinking, you don't want your kids to do any thinking, and I guess you don't care, but I happen to care about what thinking is involved in the world and how it shapes and forms the world, whatever we want to be as human beings, or shape our thoughts, the thoughts of the past, and the thoughts as they may come, if there are, will be any thoughts in the future. There may not be, it looks like. People are not inclined to do much thinking at all. To tell you the truth, it looks that way, but perhaps they don't know how to do it. They're too busy on their cell phones and sending emails. Anyway, as I say, this is a politically incorrect show. And the second thing is, this is a Christian show. I'm a Christian. Of course, it means I adhere to the full authority of Holy Scripture from Genesis to Revelation. And I adhere to the creeds of the church fully, Apostles, Nicene, and Athanasian Creed. Of course, I read the great Christian books. When I have the opportunity, these are the books I will read. St. Augustine's Confessions, St. T.S. Eliot, The Idea of a Christian Society, John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress, Milton's Paradise Lost. Milton wrote that great epic poem, Paradise Lost, a monument of Christian thought. And book two is particularly fascinating, where Satan says, better to rule in hell than serve in heaven. And that is always will be the position of evil and degradation in the world. Satan, that is his view, better to rule in hell than serve in heaven. That was his choice, and it's the choice we all face as human beings in the world. Whether we want to rule in heaven or serve and love in heaven, rule in hell or serve and love in heaven, that's our choice. All right? Now, let's move on. As I say, this is a Christian show, and I welcome all faiths, all ideas and opinions. I know that Jesus died for them and gave his life on the cross to them. And he wants them, everybody, as he said in Timothy, as Paul said in the Epistle to Timothy, he wills that everybody be saved and be with him in heaven. He wants it. He wants people to be there, whether Muslim, whether Jewish, whoever they are, he wants them to be, to enjoy his sacrificial love in heaven. So, as I say, I welcome all faiths because Jesus welcomes all people in his love and in his undying and merciful love, which he wishes to share with all humanity in heaven. Third point of this is I'm a politically conservative person in the sense that on certain issues I'm conservative, whether abortion or gay marriage. By the way, as I said, I have nothing against gay people. I love them. They're wonderful people. And I know that God wants them to be with him in heaven. As it says in Timothy, he wills that all men be saved. My gay brothers and sisters, I love them. I know that Jesus died for them, and I have every goodwill to them that I can possess, as to anyone. That includes also my Muslim brothers and sisters, etc. As I said, I mean, my politics are conservative, but I draw the line at Jesus' directions concerning poverty and underclass people. He had a great love for the poor. He said the poor are blessed, or poor in spirit are blessed. Of course, he meant by those statements, he meant not that it was good to be poor. I think Jesus wants an equal distribution of wealth in the world. He wants us to share our wealth with one another as much as we can. But he doesn't want a world of inequality. That I'm sure of. He doesn't want a world of inequality. And those statements that be poor in spirit are blessed and the poor are blessed, they mean that they will be rewarded in the next life for their sufferings in this. Jesus definitely chose for his disciples, tradesmen, working men, not educated, not wealthy, and he associated with sinners, so-called, meaning moral and ritual sinners. Many of his followers were poor people. He died before two criminals on the cross. He had a great, great concern and love for poverty and the poor. He himself was poor and lived a life of poverty. So we have to understand that I draw the line in terms of my politics with this issue of helping the poor. We should go out there and help people. We should help the poor, particularly. They deserve it. And I want to be with them. If I'm going to be with anybody, I'll be with a poverty-stricken person and an underclass people, and not with a wealthy person, necessarily. Although there's nothing wrong with wealth. It's just that most people just hoard it for themselves and don't do much of anything with it. I want to say that I'm an author. I run two radio shows, a podcast show and a blog talk radio show. These shows are Christian in orientation. But as I said, there are many, many people that visit these shows from all over the world. Over 4,300 people have visited the podcast show, and many people from Muslim countries, Iran and Iraq and Saudi Arabia, surprisingly, have visited my blog talk radio show. As I said, I welcome all, and I had a Muslim friend in Iran, a philosophy student, who loved my Christian books, which shows to me how very bright and intelligent this person was. She was willing to open her mind to other thoughts and not close it. People who close their minds or don't use their minds, they are doomed to be in a garbage can. Maybe they want that. I don't know. They may like it or something. Maybe they think it'll be a good thing. I don't think so. The more you read, the more you know, the more you're formed, the more you're shaped, the more you rise up. The more books you read, the more great books you read, the more you think, the more your mind will be developed and you will grow as a person substantially. from the ground up. If you're going to be illiterate, and if you're going to be illiterate and ignorant, then you will be in the ground at the bottom, and you will destroy, not only destroy your own life, but destroy the life of many other people. If that's what your choice is, that's fine. Make it. Make your choice to be illiterate. Make your choice not to know anybody, not to know anything. That's your choice, then you live with it, okay? As Mortimer Adler said in his great book, How to Read a Book, he said in this book, number one, he said the Bible was the foundation of Western civilization, Western culture, and he said that the images of television and computers and movies are drugs. That's what he said. They're drugs. We learn nothing from them. We only learn from complex works in print, preferably the older books, not the new ones, which are sort of superficial and easy. Well, anyway, there are these Christian shows that I have, and I welcome all comers and all people, and they welcome all people, because Jesus welcomes all people in his love. I've also written up 10 books, Christian books and legal books, two legal books, Select Legal Topics, Volumes 1 and 2, and several Christian books, Essays in the Christian Worldview, Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, a book on the parables. The parables are fascinating. They are the words and thoughts of the Son of God, of Christ. They represent his thinking, and you can't stop reading the parables. All 41 of them are interpreted in this book of mine, and I think you'll enjoy the book. Most of all, don't think about my book, but think about reading the parables. They're great work, okay? They will inform you, they will raise you up from the ground, from possibly where you are at this point. I recently read a book on the Psalms, interpreting 150 Psalms. I'll be talking about the Psalms tonight. My talk will call a little word on the Psalms. I think you'll enjoy it to stay here. I hope you'll enjoy it. Most of all, you if you read the Psalms, you'll enjoy the Psalms. They're great lyric poetry. I read them in Hebrew in seminary. They're great lyric poetry. They're the legacy of Jewish lyric poetry, Jewish literature, and they also are great thought mechanisms. They're great, 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 great all around, both as literature and as thought, as spiritual food. John Donne said of the Psalms that they were the manna of the church. If you read John Donne's poetry, you can trust his comment in this respect. If you read his sermons, you'll be grabbed up even more by his intellectual greatness. Donne was a great, great thinker, a great Christian, and he respected the Bible and the Psalms particularly, because he said, as I said and I repeat it again, he said they were the manna of the church. John Donne, Anglican poet and pastor. Great man. I have written other books. I'm writing a book on my four blogs, political, literary, theological. There'll be four books that will be coming out soon. I'm also writing a book on the miracles in the Bible, and this book will be soon out, I hope. I've written one chapter of it. I wish I had time to write more. I've been busy. I've also written a book called Race Gestae, a chapter in Bender's Consolidated Evidence. I've written a chapter in New York Jurisprudence, in Criminal Law, Demands and Notices. That is hopefully a helpful exposition of the criminal law found in New York Jurisprudence. I'm writing a book on the Book of Job. Book Job is a great book. It's most informative. It informs us of the trials and tribulations and the Edomite that were cast upon an Edomite, non-Jewish person that was made into the Hebrew Bible, and it's a great piece of work. And Book of Job, you will learn so much from it if you read it. And as I say, when you read these things I mentioned, you will be raised up. If you don't read them, you'll be raised down to the level of the New York Post or The Economist, which will destroy you intellectually, if at all, help, and certainly not help you too much. The Book of Job will help you immeasurably because of its wisdom and knowledge and insight into suffering. Next, I I have written a chapter in New York Family Law and Practice on paternity. Wrote that chapter. And I also have written 3 extensive law review articles, 1 in the Syracuse Law Review on criminal procedure, a survey article, and it was bought by the United States Supreme Court and the State Department. And I've written 2 Academicus articles in an Albanian scientific journal, and those articles were bought by many, many academic institutions throughout the world. And of course, I'm pleased to say both were bought by the State Department. Those articles are on the United States educational system and on sexual orientation discrimination. I did a critique of the United States educational system in the article, which is one of the big problems in this country, which is dragging our young people down to the bottom, where unless they go to an elite private school. And also the article on sexual orientation discrimination, of course, although I may disagree with my gay brothers and sisters in their choice of lifestyle, I respect them, I love them, and I know that Jesus wants them to be with him in heaven. And I certainly abhor any kind of hatred or discrimination given to anyone. And as I said in this article opposing sexual orientation discrimination, I said it was bad, it was no good, I opposed it, and I still oppose any form of discrimination against anybody, whether I agree with them, I don't have to agree with them, but I don't believe they should be subject to hatred or discrimination in the least. Next, I'm going to talk about, the Psalms tonight. The Psalms are one of the most wonderful examples of lyric poetry that I know of. From my earliest youth, when I attended Sunday school, I've been reading the Psalms. I recall committing to memory certain psalms, particularly Psalms 1 and 2 and 23. As I said, the Psalms have been called by John Donne. I repeat, John Donne was a lyric poet genius, a great Anglican poet, and he said of the Psalms they were the manna of the church. The first thing about the Psalms is their great beauty, their great poetry. They are wonderful poetry, lyric poetry, whether translated into English or not, or written in Hebrew. Whoever wrote these Psalms was a great, great thinker and poet. Whoever wrote them, it's unknown, 3,500 years ago, maybe 4,000, it's a long time ago, but whoever wrote these things was a virtual lyric poet genius and a thinker and a genius thinker. So you have to understand about the Psalms, the first thing about them is their lyric poetic beauty. They are essentially what remains of a large body of Hebrew lyric poetry, which can also be found in the Song of Solomon and the Book of Judges. There are other forms of lyric poetry in the Hebrew Bible, but the Psalms are the major component of it. But it's also found in the Songs of Solomon and the Book of Judges. What are we going to say about the Psalms? Well, they're hymns, essentially. They're lyric poetry. Many of them are hymns. Sometimes they're curses. Sometimes they speak of God's judgment on evil and his reward for the righteous. So sometimes they're hymns, hymns of praise, but sometimes they're curses. Sometimes they speak of God's judgment on the evil and his reward for the righteous. Sometimes they speak of persecution by the psalmist's enemies. And they often, which is the most wonderful component of the Psalms, they offer us a great concern and exhort us to aid the poor, the needy, and the widows. It's a regular litany in the Psalms, constantly said. They're hymns, sometimes they're curses, sometimes they speak of God's judgment on evil and his reward for the righteous, sometimes they speak of persecution by the enemies of the psalmist. They often exhibit great concern and aid us to aid the poor, needy, and the widows. But these are components of what I just said of the Psalms. You have to read them to grasp what they're all about. But the Psalms are very old. That's one factor that we should understand about them. We don't know how old they are precisely. They could be 3,000 years old or more. But when we read or listen to the Psalms, we see the roots of antiquity before the temple, and sometimes see Hebrews dancing and singing these hymns before the temple. The Psalms are really quite old and ancient. We don't really know how old they are, but when we read and listen to the Psalms, we see the roots of antiquity and may even see in our minds these ancient Hebrews dancing and singing these hymns before the temple. The Psalms are old, very old, and many times we do not know who their author was. We know he was a great lyric poet. We know this about him, that his greatness, his literary greatness is obvious, and he's outlasted the sands of time for almost 4,000 years. But the Psalms are old, and many times we do not know their author, but many, we are told, have been ascribed to King David. Now, I can say this much. I can't stop reading and rereading the Psalms because I firmly believe they are outstanding and great lyric poetry. And as I've said this many times in this show, and I'll say it again, I challenge anyone to read a translation of the Psalms in English and the translation of a Greek play or any other translated piece of writing and see what they grow tired of more quickly. So I can't stop reading and rereading the Psalms because of their greatness as lyric poetry, and I challenge anyone to read a translation of the Psalms in English and the translation of a Greek play or Roman play or any other piece of antiquity written in the past and see which they grow tired of more quickly. I can't talk about in this essay, talk about all the Psalms, but I'd like to talk about briefly Psalm 62. Psalm 62 is quite a wonderful piece of work. And I've always been stipulating my thinking about this particular psalm, and I have a particular, I can't talk about the entire psalm, but I'd like to talk about verse 9 in the psalm, which grabs me entirely in my thinking. That verse states, verse 9 in Psalm 62, men of low esteem are but a breath, men of high esteem are a delusion. In the balances they go up, they are together lighter than a breath. This particular verse has always struck me with its currency and modernity. The poet says in this verse that there's no difference in actuality in class demarcations. Their significance between poor and rich, whoever they are, the poet says in this verse there's no difference. And the poet says in this verse there's no difference in class demarcations. The poet says in this verse, verse 9, that their significance is meaningless and insignificant. The poet is telling us in verse 9, which I'll say it again, the verse states, men of low esteem are but a breath, men of high esteem are a delusion. In the balances they go up, they are together lighter than a breath. This particular verse has always struck me with its tremendous currency and modernity. The poet says in this verse, there's no difference in class demarcations between rich and poor, low and high class. Their significance to the psalmist and poet, this poet anyway, is meaningless and insignificant. The poet is telling us that there is no reality to defining a person by class, since these terms have no reality. I find the poet's statement that men of high esteem are delusion particularly concerning, because he says the same of a person of a low esteem state, having no meaning and being defined by that term. So the poet's statement that men of high estate are a delusion and men of low esteem are but a breath, he's really saying they're both one and the same. And this is a particularly compelling verse. He says the same of a person of low estate, having no meaning, being defined by that person. The poet tells us that taken together, he sees no point in upper or lower class. This particular poet and thinker is and was making a very advanced thought statement, namely that defining a person by class demarcations is meaningless and reality means nothing. So we have to understand this particular poet, this particular writer of this lyric poem, where he, when he said that men of low esteem are but a breath, men of high esteem are a delusion, and the balance they go up, they are together lighter than a breath. It's always struck me with its modernity. The poet says in this verse, there is no difference in class demarcation, low or high. Their significance to the poet and psalmist is meaningless. The poet is telling us here in this verse 9 that there's no reality to defining a person by class, as these terms have no applicability and reality. So I find the poet's statements that men of high esteem are a delusion particularly compelling, because he says the same of a person of low estate. Both have no meaning. He sees no point in these demarcations, and he's making here a very advanced statement concerning class demarcations. So when I read this psalm, or one might say any other part of the Bible, I am always in the presence of extremely advanced thinking, which will always be a challenge to the world system and the thinking of the soul. When I read this psalm, one might say, or any other part of the Bible, I know I'm in the presence of extremely significant and advanced thinking, which will always be a challenge to the world system and thinking of the soul. Give one more example, the statement by Jesus that the poor are blessed is an equally challenging statement and an extreme example of advanced thinking. Those who say the Bible is irrelevant or boring or old, I heard someone say that because something's a book is old, therefore it's worthless, which was a meaningless, stupid, frankly, incredibly stupid statement. But I have to say that to give me another example of the profundity of biblical thinking is the statement of Jesus, the poor are blessed, which is equally challenging and an example of advanced thinking. And I challenge you all, we say the Bible is irrelevant, to read Psalm 62, verse 9, which I just went through here. I hope you've enjoyed this little talk tonight about the Psalms, particularly Psalm 62. It's a chapter in my book, chapter 37, entitled A Little Word on the Psalms. I urge you not to read my book because I'm not that great. But I know the Psalms are great, and I urge you to go back to the Bible, go back to the Psalms, read them, every one of them, reflect on them, think about them, concentrate on the Psalms in the Bible. As John Donne, and I'll say again, this great Anglican poet, said of the Psalms, they are the manna of the church. He knew what he was talking about. He was a person who was extremely advanced in thinking, and he challenges all in his statements and in his sermons and in his poems. Read John Donne and learn. Read the Bible and learn more. Good night. I hope you work with your children to read these people that I just mentioned, whether Donne or the Psalms of the Bible. Whatever you're reading, I'm telling you, I'm recommending you to read these books, because particularly important for your children, because their minds will be raised up. And if they read the junk they're given, their minds and their lives will be pulled down, which is what's happening right now. Night.